Okay. Good morning again. Hello, and we're gonna, Mr. Shem, go through a couple of questions. Somebody on the call has provided a couple of questions. Once again, for email, if anybody wants to email questions in, Mr. Shem, by next week, I should have real-time access to questions on my cell phone during the call, hopefully. So at least starting next week, we should be able to do that. So somebody on the call today, before we started the recording part of the call, asked a question, a couple of questions relating to the 12 steps, at least, if not to recovery, maybe. And I want to kind of address, I'm going to try to share about them, if I can, some thoughts and maybe experience. The other thing is that I want to begin with tefillah again, because this is important. Okay. So there's a beautiful thought I just want to share with you. I think it's a beautiful thought. In a davening, in Shacharis, Shemoneh Esrei, there's, in this Asfard, there's, in the middle of the Elokai Netzor is not part of Shemoneh Esrei originally. It's only part of our davening because it became the minhag to say it after Shemoneh Esrei by so many people that that it became part of the standard, you know, Nusach HaTefillah in every sitter and all that, probably a few hundred years ago. But around 700-ish, you know, in the time of the Gemara, we had recordings of Gemara Brochus of Amoraim. Around the year 700-ish, we had recordings of Amoraim and who said different tefillahs after Shemoneh Esrei, short tefillahs and things like that. So one of them was the Elokai Netzor that we say. Another is the Yehi Ratzon that we say on Shabbos Mevorchim for Rosh Chodesh. That was Rav's tefillah that he said after Shemoneh Esrei, if I remember correctly. And that's why in Nesach Sfard, in some places, they say Bizchus Tefillas Rav by Rosh Chodesh benching. And some people say Bizchus Tefillas Rabin, which is obviously a mistake, or whatever. It's not a mistake, maybe, but it's a kind of a kvetching of Bizchus Tefillas Rav, of has to do with Rav more than it has to do with the Rabin. Personally, I don't understand what a Rabin has to do with that, but I think it's just a play on the name Rav. Maybe because some people didn't, you know, printers or people didn't understand what Rav has to do with this or anything because they didn't know the Gemara and Brochus. But regardless of what the, of that, there are other tefillahs also, and in this Asfar they stick in a little Yehi Ratzon, and this little vort is I'm saying it now because it does relate to what this man at the beginning of the call asked, which I'll get to. So first I'll share the vort and I'll kind of try to weave in the response. The nusach is, let me just grab a sitter so that I say it right. It's in the middle of, it's in Nusach Sfard, most Nusach Sfards, versions of Nusach Sfard, in the middle of in the middle of Elokai Netzor, before Aseh Leman Shemecha, which is sort of like a sealing kind of a prayer where in the Zechus of Aseh Leman Shemecha, Aseh Leman, you know, Yeminech, Aseh Leman Kedushas Secha, etc. So that's like our that's sort of like tachanun, sort of, for the Shemoneh Esrei. It's like a final seal of like a push to push the tefillah to the Rabbanu Shalom. Please do this, really. That's what that's saying. So before you say that part of Elokai Netzor, which is not part of Elokai Netzor recorded in the Gemara at all, there's this little tefila that they say in Nisfasfard, which is from a different Amara, and it goes, Yiratzon Melechanecha, may it be your will before you, or may it be desired before you, Hashem, Havaya, Ribbono Shel Elokai, my own God. Elokai always means my own God. It doesn't mean the God of the world. We're not talking to the God of the world. That's not our concern, whether whose God he is right now. Elokeinu, those things have to do with whose God he is, how big he is, etc. Elokai just means my own personal God. It's referring to the relationship that that God and I have. My God, that's the word means. Veloke Abasai, and the God of my fathers, the God that my fathers had a personal relationship, hopefully, with. Shelosa ala kinas odamalai, that no one should be, that I shouldn't have jealousy of another person. Kina, that the kina for another person shouldn't come on to me. Velo kinasi ala chayrim, and jealousy of me shouldn't come upon others. In other words, no one else should be jealous of me. After all, we just were saying, myself, the offer of Koltiyah should be like dirt, should be like dust to everyone. Like Reb Tzvi Meyer Shlita always says, to be a shmata, And the gedarm of being a shmata is a good question. That has to do with recovery also work, very, very much so. But you can ask Reb Tzvi Meyer how it's right to be a shmata. We're not supposed to be a shmata. Go to Reb Tversky's stuff, and he'll go on and on and on about it. Humility isn't being a shmata, blah, blah, blah. But there is a place to be a shmata in a proper way. Mainly to God, and even to others, except under certain circumstances, when it's going to detract from who I really, really am. It's only the egotistical stuff that that is good to eradicate. But and that's another topic. It's a really good topic. I shouldn't get angry today at anybody. Or anger, akas isn't really, really anger. It's like get excited, emotionally excited, in a negative way. It could be anger. It could be other things too. The shaloach isecha, and I shouldn't, of course, do something that kevayocho would anger you as my God. The satzileni mi yetzahara, and please save me from the yetzahara, from imagining things that are good for me that really are bad for me. Yetzer is the yetzira. It comes from, the word yetzira meaning to like form. It means the imagination. Is the yetzer, is the imagination, hara, which is ra, which is bad. The yetzer hara, fine. Save me from the yetzer hara. This is obviously not referring to addicts when it says the addiction and yetzer hara are different. So that's not the same. But a Jew asks to be saved from the yetzer hara all the time. We ask that from the Rabbanu Shalom. Every Jew. We asked that. There's some background noise. Is somebody wanted to say something? Maybe somebody took their phone off of mute because they want to say something, and I keep talking. So I'll be quiet for a minute. Please, if you want to say something, please do, dear. No. Okay. All right. So if anybody wants to say anything during the call, please, please, please interrupt me. Don't be polite because don't be too polite, because the main thing here is to me, the interaction is more precious than me just going on and on and on. So I'm getting back to the thing. There's a lot of static. Somebody, one of you people on the line, you're in a place where there's the sound of air blowing or water flowing. Right now, you don't hear it probably, but it's like a blowing air, maybe. Maybe your air conditioner in your car is on and it's blowing on your earpiece. Or the window's open. It's usually from an air conditioner, and the air is blowing directly on the earpiece, and you can't hear it. But the passage of the air over the earpiece causes like a hissing noise to everybody else. So if you could, it's still going on, but it's a little bit less. Anyway, okay, we do the best we can. V'satzileni mi'etzahara, and save me from the Yetzirah. V'sein b'li bi, and please, we're asking him to put in my heart hachna'a va'anava. Hachna'a va'anava. And that's the end of the bakasha, of the personal part of that bakasha. The rest of the bakasha is all for the tzibur. It's all for the sake of the tzibur. Malkeinu v'lakeinu, Malkeinu, this is public now. Our King and our God. Yached shimcha v'olamecha, let your name be unified in the world. B'nei irecha, build up your city again. Yased beisecha, establish your house. B'shachleu hechalecha, and another word for establishing your hecho, meaning your the place that you live, meaning the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or another word for the Beis HaMikdash. Habet, which is the Shechina, which is a representative of the God's presence on earth, the Midah of Malchus and the Shechina. The Kabet, Kibbutz Goliath, gather in all the Jewish people. Ufdeitza Necha, save your sheep. The Samacha Besecha, and give joy to your people. There's a lot of background noise, by the way. One of you folks, your phone connection is making like it's something's creating a lot of noise there. If you could please help with that would be fabulous. So hello. It's a little bit better, but it's still there. There's still a hiss there. If you could help us, that would be great. The tefillah there is asking for a lot of things, but in the personal part, by the way, the general pattern of that tefillah is first asking stuff for myself, and then asking stuff only for the tzibur. And you see that pattern in general in Jewish prayers. In the Shemona Esrei, which is the Gemara refers to tefillah, in the Shemona Esrei, that's the pattern. The first brachos begin with things that are very, very personal. The first bakasha says things that are very personal sounding. The later, chinin da'as, saving me, that Hashem should, that you should fight my battles for me. Things that are very personal, accepting me in tshuva, and even though we're asking for the whole tzibur, but there are things that I can relate to on a very personal level that affect me as an individual very easily. Later in Shemona Esrei, you get to the Lamal Shinim and Hashiva Shofkeinu Kibarishana and Binyan Yerushalayim and all this other stuff that are clearly only Tzibur related. And I'm included in the Tzibur, of course, so they relate to me in as much as I'm a member, but they're not personal. They're not things that, even if there was no tzibur and if it was just me, it would make sense to ask for these things, Whereas the first ones, I don't need a tzibur for any of these first, four or five or six things, eight things actually, up to Rifayinu. And then is the eighth. And then, Baruch Aleinu is already crossing that gap, that bridge, because now you're talking about the economy, which is, dependent on the public, But still, even there, so it's the first eight brachos that are clearly personal, also. So that's a general pattern of tefillahs, that you start with me, 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 and then the chazal who've instituted these brachos expect us to expand outward. So that's the first, aspect of this that I'm touching on that relate to what that guy, was asking. and that is that if a person ends up feebler oriented, then you know that even the work that they were doing that's personally oriented is not really selfish. Okay? In other words, this stuff affects me, but since I'm asking it sincerely for other people's sake as well, sincerely asking for their sake as well, then that changes what I'm asking for myself from something that's selfish to something that's just good for me. You know, that's a different kind of a person, and it works lemafreya. It works in retrospect. In other words, a Rebbe of mine once said to me, how do you know if these ideas that are coming into your head are from the Yetzer Hara or from the Yetzer Tov? And he said to me, you know, he said to some people that were asking, he said, well, you see how it ends up. I think this is from Tzvi Goldstein or somebody, or someone else, you know, who was from back in the old days of RJJ or whatever. Hi, good morning. He said that if the Eitzah that you have, this idea that you have, or this feeling, let's say, feeling depressed, sad, how do you know that it's not, you know, Shivron Lev and that it's depression, or that it's not depression, but it's Shivron Lev, which is good? You know, how do you know which one it is? So he would say, well, it depends. What does it lead you to do? Does it lead you to do mitzvahs, to learn better and to be nicer to everybody, to be more tolerant of other people, not to be makfid on your family and, you know, your wife and your children so much? And to come to davening and to daven with, you know, with joy in front of the Rabbanu Shalom, and to do mitzvahs to be encouraged to do mitzvahs and to do them well, or does it make you want to lay in bed? Then it's not Shivron Lev, then it's just depression, and it's not precious to the Rabbanu Shalom. Then it's not precious to the Rabbanu Shalom at all. It's just self-centered whining. And this is what the Kutzker was referring to. When the Kutzker asked, he said, why is it that there are gates? It says in the Gemara in Brachas, afilu kol sha'arim na'alu, afilu na'alu kol sha'arim sha'arei na'a lo ninalu. And there's another place where it says sha'arei dima. And Rashi, Afanort, connects the two, and he says, why? Because probably someone who's in pain will be crying. So it's the same sha'arim. So the Kutzker asks, if they're never closed, this is the question, this is the joke that people ask about 7-Elevens, you know, if it says open 24/7, why is there a lock on the door? They wasted, you know, $50 putting a lock on the door, because they never lock it. So the Kutzker says, well, if the sha'arim of ona'a and of tears are never closed, then why are there sha'arim? Why are there sha'arim at all? You know? So the Kutzker says, because of tears of shtus. In other words, self-centered whining. You know, that happens to be religious self-centered whining. You know? There's a big difference between, oy, what's going to be with me? Gewalt, gewalt. And feeling and you know, that motivating me to try harder and to get help and to just do whatever it takes to get better, to be better, you know, et cetera, you know, that can be humbling. That's hachna'ava anava. Save us from the Yetzirah, I said in that tefillah, and put in our hearts hachna'a and anava. Hachna'a and anava are things that are the opposite of the Yetzirah. Being machni'a. And being machnia ourselves means setting aside my will, surrendering my will, what I want. That's the opposite of the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is nefesh rechava. That's the Yetzer Hara. That's self-centeredness. I want, I want, I want. I deserve, I deserve, I deserve. And it can be for ruchnias as well. Saying, I deserve madregas, I deserve this, I deserve da-da-da-da. That's all avodas atzmi. saying, I'm going to learn a daf today. Well, am I going to finish Shas? Am I going to be up there on a thing and my wife's going to say, oh, my husband finished Shas. Great, and this and that. That's not my concern today. That would be nice. Nothing wrong with that. But that's not my concern. Is it part of my motivation? Probably. Probably because I'm an egotistical guy and that's not evil. It's okay, you know. But that's not on my mind today. I'm going to banish that from my mind and I'm going to focus on trying to do what's right just now. Why? Because I want to. Not because I'm going to get this or because I want to. That's all. I don't have to have a philosophical deep reason for this. It doesn't make me superior to the goyim around me. It doesn't make me superior to the other Jews around me. It doesn't prove that my derech and Baruch Hashem is the better derech. It has nothing to do with anyone else. Ein malchus negas b'chaverta afilu k'molim mima, which means, really, on a personal level, my avoda and your avoda, that's our malchus, my avoda and your avoda cannot touch each other. Afilu k'molim mima. There is no such thing as competition. There really isn't. In Avodas Hashem, there's no such thing as competition. And once I understand that, my entire direction has changed. And that's a very hard thing for many of us to accept, for me to accept. Very difficult. Philosophically, it sounds kind of stupid. What do you mean? It's horrible. Why is it hard for you to accept? No. If you're paying attention, as you become more self-aware, you will start to pay attention to how many things you're doing because people are watching. You'll start to be more and more honest with yourself and seeing how you behave when no one's watching in Avodas Hashem and in other things. And you'll start to realize more and more, we all go through this. We start to see more and more how shot through our whole day is and every aspect of it with shown off, with being perceived of as blank and blank, and how much of our behavior that we're doing, so many guys have told me this, and I saw it in myself. I behave differently to my wife when I know that she's going to the mikveh tonight or tomorrow than I do when she just got her period 2 days ago, let's say. The third day after she gets her period, let's say, I'll behave differently to her. I'm not going to start cursing at her just because she got her period. I'm not talking about that. And by the way, thank God I'm past this for years. But I'm just letting you know that this is something that I saw for years was going on, even in recovery. Not that I wasn't like giving her money or something, you know, buying her gifts every day for the 3 days before she gets her period, although I know many guys who do that. And they excuse it as, well, Lafayah saw it's the parish, you're supposed to, blah, 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 blah. And that might be fine for normal folks. But for a guy for whom sex is probably the most important thing in the world, probably, you know, and if you're on this call, probably sex is really, really much more important to you and me than is wise or healthy for it to be, or than is necessary for it to be, you know. It's not a self-control issue. It's just a stupidity issue, you know. But we make a big, big deal. We make a big, big deal about something that shouldn't be as big a deal as we make of it. So, and we get into all kinds of trouble because of this. So, and that's part of why we're here, to get things into perspective and to have the priorities shifted around and to minimize things that are too big, to maximize things that are too small. Get our lives in kind of a more sensible, healthy pattern, and that's one of the fruits of recovery, of course, not just sobriety, you know. So anyway, getting back to the thing, the tefillos that we, so the Kutzker said that the Sha'arei Ona'a, Sha'arei Dima, they're closed, Taka, for tears of shtus, so that they don't get in and just ruin everything. Because, you know, Kol Misha Ein Bodea Asur L'Rachem Alav. The person's just being a moron. It's Asur to have Rachmanas on such a person. This is the Mesillas Yesharim quotes this, and it's Divrei Chazal. And this is what they mean in Chazal when they say, if a person is Merachem on someone who he should have a Achzarius and be strong to, then one day, because he thinks he needs to be so ultra-liberal and bleeding heart kind of thing, and, oh, just be nice, be nice, be nice, be nice, even to people who justice demands that you are not nice to them and that you do what they deserve. I'm not talking about your personal justice. This guy honked at you, therefore I have to honk back at him because it's justice. That's not justice. That's a time for v'nafshi ke'ofer lakol tehiyah. You know, when people act personally like a jerk to me, that's not a time for justice. That's a time for me to say, well, you know what, righteous indignation is probably a better idea for someone more qualified to handle. That's a time for hachna'a and anava. I'm talking about halachic justice. When somebody is, if the Beis Din decides that we're not going to do malchus anymore for blank and blank and whatever, then what's going to happen is they're going to end up being achzari on people who they should be merachem on. This is what the Gemara says, that a person who doesn't use the midah of achzarius in the proper place will end up being an achzar to people who he shouldn't be. I mean, you know, if a person is merachem too much, then they're going to be an achzar too much as well. And you see this in Jewish history all over the place. If I may say, you know, there could be Christians on the call, of course. I'm not trying to insult any religions here. But I'm just saying that, because everybody's on the call, this is a public call. But and I know there are many Christians on Guard Your Eyes, even religious ones and non-religious ones, etc. But Jewish history is replete with at least in Europe, the Catholic version of Christianity has always claimed, particularly in the Inquisition, has always claimed one of the reasons that they're so bad to the Jews is for our benefit, you know. So and much torture and murder was done on, you know, because of that. So that's an example of, you know, when Christianity really stems from this concept specifically of not being an officer, of not fulfilling things like the death penalty in, you know, by the court of law, by the Beis Din and stuff. That kind of stuff is the root of Christianity. Love and love only, you know, no justice, you know, no din. And it's not the time for that. You know, it's clearly not the time for that. They ended up being an achzar for many centuries to people who they should have had rachmanis on. So we do this ourselves in our own lives all the time. So getting back to the thing, so the whole Elokai Netzor business, that little tefillah there is saying that among other things, that the opposite of Yetzer Hara is Hachna'a and Anava. Save me from the Yetzer Hara and put in my heart Hachna'a and Anava. And that's kind of where the 12 steps touches normal Avodas Hashem to me. There are certain topics in 12-step culture and in the 12 steps themselves that really lend themselves to very nicely to improving somebody's avodas Hashem. One of them is that humility is really the yesod of everything in the 12 steps. We begin with saying the whole introduction into the 12 steps, the key to the door into the 12 steps is humility. Is saying, I am an addict publicly among safe people, you know, admitting to other addicts by walking. All 12 steps are based on meetings. That's the basic unit of 12 steps is one addict helping another personally. You know each other. You don't hide from each other and call yourself gingerbread man. That's not where recovery comes from. It never did, and it probably never will. That's where being honest comes from to some degree, but like I said in a previous call, being honest using a fake name to everybody else who's using a fake name is being honest when there's nobody there. It's honesty by proxy. There's no actual honesty there. So relationships is what it's all about. And the reality of relationships is everything in a relationship. I like to try to point this out. If somebody were married to a woman, if you were married to your wife for 15, 20 years, let's say, and you were rifling through the drawers looking for a bill or something, and you found a letter and you opened it up and you saw that she was adopted. Okay? And then you came over to her and you said, Chana Miriam, your parents aren't your biological parents? And she says, what do you mean? And you show her this letter. And she says, no, they're not, actually. And you go, Chana Miriam, why didn't you tell me that? And she's like, well, I didn't think it was your business, you know, or I didn't think it was relevant. I didn't think it mattered anything. I mean, I'm Jewish, you know, I have Adis that I'm Jewish. What's the difference? You know what I mean? Like, what's the difference? Or that you found out that she was a Gioris, that really her mother converted when she was 6 years old, you know. When your wife was 6 years old, her mother converted and she converted her. And when she was a bas mitzvah, she agreed and she went to the mikvah and she was converted again for herself, kosher and this and that. And she never told you. And you've been married for 20 years, whatever, and she never told you. Is that a breach? Is that grounds for divorce? No. It's not grounds. How would you feel, though? How would you feel? This would rock a marriage. This would rock a marriage to the core for a while. Okay? It probably wouldn't cause a divorce, but unless it's part of a bigger pattern of faking and hiding. But I didn't know who you really were. Now, if your wife never told you, or if you never told your wife that you have that, you know, one day she goes through the drawers, you go through the drawers and you find a paper that says she won the, literature award in eighth grade, you know, and you ask her, well, you won the literature award. Like, I never knew that. And she said, yeah, I used to love, you know, writing short stories, and I was really good at it. And she shows you some of her old short stories that she wrote, and they're beautiful. And you say, wow, I never knew that about you. That's not going to rock your confidence in her. Because she hid that from you. That's different, because that's not who she is. That's what she's done. You know? The fact that somebody hid from you some things that they did in the past that don't define who they are at all doesn't rock the relationship. It doesn't mean that the relationship was really, to some degree, fake. But if these things that the person's discovered define the other person into a different kind of person, you know, then that's like, let's say they were a Gioris, you know, and you never know. You know, you never knew that she was a Gioris. Well, why should I tell you? Well, why should you tell me? Why shouldn't you tell me? That's the question. I didn't marry somebody else. I married you. Why shouldn't you tell me that you're a Gioris? Like, why wouldn't you tell me that? That's important. That's in your mind almost every day that you go to shul and you meet another Gioris who's there. The first thing you think of is, I can relate to her. That's me in some respect, you know? It's like many times, you're doing a mitzvah, and, you know, every time in the morning when you say Shalom Tani Goy, you think of that. And you say that bracha with a special kavana, or you don't say it according to certain poskim. But it's like, you know, it's like this is part of who you are. It's not just something that you did, you know. And in the same way, the honesty, that's the hachna'a in 12-step fellowships, where we lead with our weakness to each other. And we don't do what in Yiddishkeit is encouraged, and it should be encouraged, to toot your horn. you know? It's encouraged to toot your horn, you know? That's fine, you know? They call you up for a wedding to make a bracha. They don't say, you know, and now for the third bracha, we ask, you know, Moshe Klein, who has 15 years sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous, to say the Brite Brocha, you know, whatever. You know, they don't say that. They don't say, now for the third bracha, we ask, you know, Rabbi, you know, whatever, Shimon Goldberg, to say the bracha because, you know, he used to beat his wife, but he hasn't done it in 32 years. You know, it's like they, you know, he quit because he quit smoking. You know, you don't say these things. That's not something we're proud of. We hide these things in Jewish circles. You hide these things and you bury them deep. And that's fine for a normal culture. But in 12 steps, you lead with your weakness. The intro is, I'm an alcoholic and my life is unmanageable by me. Every time that somebody is a guy with 30 years of sobriety, Chuck C. would come to a crowd of you know, literally 10,000 people sometimes speaking at an AA convention, and he would introduce himself, hi, I'm Chuck C. and I'm a drunk, you know? I mean, you know, it's that's why in the recovery calls that I'm a part of, we introduce ourselves typically saying, you know, hi, I'm so-and-so, and whatever. When I act out my disease or my lust or when I drink or when I do whatever my addiction is, I do blank, 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 and blank. And, you know, by God's grace, by the chesed of Hashem, I've been sober one day at a time since, you know, whatever, a year ago, 6 months ago, you know, 10 years ago, whatever, a week ago, whatever it is. We're not beating ourselves down into the ground. We're not doing that. We're admitting the truth about ourselves. How is the truth beating yourself down into the ground? I'm not saying I'm a jerk, you know. I'm not saying that I'm a bad guy. I'm saying that I made a lot of mistakes in the past. I've made a lot of mistakes, and I have a tendency to do these things. You know, these are the kind of things I do when I am not in recovery, when I am not well. You know, that's not beating myself down. That's not putting myself down. Now, is this the path that a person who's new in recovery should take? I don't think so. I don't think that a 16-year-old boy should be listing all the ways that he acts out his lust when he masturbates every day, you know, and all the things that he does. That's just, that'll turn very easily into self-centered, egotistical, beating himself up, you know. That's going to destroy him because 99.9% of the time, kids who are masturbating and looking at porn and doing this are not addicts. Most of the people on Guard Your Eyes who come on Guard Your Eyes are not addicts. And they don't need the 12 steps, for God's sakes. What they might need is some self-honesty that people working the 12 steps get because they have to, not because we want to, but because we have to. The problem is that people who aren't that aren't addicts don't need to get self-honesty because they don't want to. Not that they wouldn't benefit from it, but they don't absolutely need to. And this is kind of what I discussed yesterday, the difference between wanting to stop and needing to stop. And as long as I need to stop because it's usher, then what I'm saying essentially is that I need to stop because that God needs me to stop really badly, you know, or that I better stop because if not, he's going to hurt me bad. So now is God my friend or is he not my friend? Well, philosophically, I can say he's my friend because he's trying to prevent me from doing things that are bad for me. But why are they bad for me? Well, essentially, they're bad for me because he's going to punish me for them. Well, then, is he my friend or not? Should he be punishing me then? Why doesn't he change his policy? It feels so good after all. Why is he trying to stop me from doing something that feels so good, you know? Is he my friend or not? You know, that's the struggle at the core that a lot of these folks are going through. A lot of people are going through, particularly young people, but even older folks who are still doing this stuff. That's the struggle. So now, with that as your background, let me ask you, how do you say Elokai, my God? How do you say it? You know, if do you really mean that? Or do you mean that he's the God of the world because, you know, he was born that way, you know? Because he made himself that way, you know? Does he deserve it? Well, did God ever work for a living? Does he deserve it? You know, it starts to go to crazy places. Basically, he's a tyrant. You know, that's the problem that people have. And if we don't recognize that, then we don't understand where Hachna'a and Anava come in. Hachna'a and Anava are about, and first Hachna'a and then Anava. Hachna'a and Anava are, without that we're dead. Because we're going to start to think all those crazy things that I just listed that are going to lead to self-destruction. They're not going to lead anywhere good. And all the muster schmooze and accepting, well, no, but you have to understand that the midas of blah, blah, that's not going to do us any good. You know? It's not going to help us. Because there's no hachna'a. Because I understand things, and I have these kashas. And that's it. You know? And why is all that? Because orgasm feels great. And I don't want to stop. And I'm upset that any God would want me to not enjoy this great pleasure. That's at the core. I'm benefiting from it. And the person doesn't realize that they're doing this. We don't do these things intentionally. We're not jerks. But that's what's going on. I like it. So I don't want to have to stop. And I don't like the fact that there's punishments. And therefore, I'm angry at God for making the system this way. Why didn't he change the system? Because I like it. Now who's the God and who's the servant? Now I'm the God and he, the writer of the Torah, the Rabbanu Shel Olam, the maker of the rules, you know, etc., he's the servant of me. You know? I'm the one who's establishing what's right and wrong now. That's called playing God. And that's what we do all the time. That's natural for us. That's why the Torah goes, Kochi Votam Yadi, over and over and over again. Watch out, Hishama Lecha, blah, blah, blah. You know, Shamanta, Avisa, Kasisa, you know? That's what it's all about, because that's the way we are. We play God. And this is on a deep emotional level, besides in the outside obvious level that the Torah is, referring to in those places. You know? So, I mean, this is important. If a person wants to be free, the one thing we need to be free of is ourselves. You know? And that's what Hachna'a and Anava are all about. Getting free of myself. You know? Now, where does this turn into self-centered stuff? Well, look, Buddhism, okay, is full of hachna'a and anava, okay? But the whole purpose of it is, and they don't hide this, they put it right out there, that this is the purpose of what we are doing. We're praying for the world, we're forgetting about ourselves, we're letting go of the gansa olam hazeh, that's what Buddhism is all about, letting go of olam hazeh completely, you know, just throwing away everything, accepting pain, you know, having hope, you know, all this, it's, you know, dropping away everything. Why? In order to nullify myself completely. Ad kidei kach, that some of them burn themselves alive sometimes in protest. And you can see these guys. It happens every, few years. One of these guys who's been training in these Buddhist monks kills himself to protest, you know, who knows what, whatever. And they sit there, pour gasoline on themselves, get in a lotus position or something, sit there and just burn to death until they fall over. They don't scream out and go, ah, help, I hurt too much, throw water on me. They don't do that. They just sit there and because they've literally thrown away olam hazeh. That's tremendous. Hachna'a, isn't it? But what's the whole point? The point is for me to get nirvana, you know, for me to be connected to the Buddha or something. You know, that's, it's all, now how about Yiddishkeit? Isn't it all to get olam haba? Well, no. The Mishnah says, Al tihi ka'avarim ha-misham shenes harav ha-manas le-kabel pras. The Chafetz Chaim's generation was the generation where he knew that the message of Yiddishkeit to them could not just be like this. His mishalim, one after another, try to motivate people to do good, because he says to them, after you die, you're going to come up to Olam Haba, and all you're going to have is rotten fat on your boat from Africa. And the two little diamonds that you collected are going to be worth so much. Collect the diamonds now while they're cheap. Collect the diamonds now while they're cheap. Everything with the Chofetz Chaim is like that. Not everything, but so much. Because he knew he was talking to a dor that, number one, really believed in Olam Haba, unlike most, you know, people now, where it's like it's a concept, but believe in it in a chushadika way that motivates you, like getting money motivates you, like it was in Europe back in the day. No, we're not like that now. Sorry, we don't even believe it's real. Look, I'll give you a funny example. There are some people in 12 steps that I've heard of who say that God can't be in your list of, you can't have in your fourth step where you list your resentments, the people you have resentments with, God can't be one of them. And they have some philosophical reason as to why God can't be on your fourth step. You have a resentment against God that can't be in your fourth step because blah, 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 blah. But my sponsor just laughed and he said to me, well, are you angry at him or not? If you are, then that means that he's real enough to you for you to be angry at him. That's called emunah. That's real emunah. Oh, but it's not nice. It's pasnish to be angry at Hashem. It's apikorsis. First of all, it's not a precursor. Second of all, it's stupid, yes, but we have plenty of stupid emotions. Emotions aren't intelligent. You know, if you're angry at God, that's because that might mean a good thing, that you really believe he's real, that he's a real entity, a real, like, not person, man or woman, you know, person, but a person in terms of a relationship. He's really there. If you say I can't be angry at him, no, that doesn't make any sense. It might be because you don't really believe he's real. He's just a concept to you. So it's the same thing here, you know. And that works for the Chofetz Chaim's door because that's the direction that he went on. By the way, the call's ending now. It's 9 o'clock. If people are getting on, that's fine. But I'm just letting you know that the call is from 8 to 9, and now it's ending. We're just wrapping it up. So just so that you should know for next time, Kaverim. So because I just heard a bell go off. But anyway, so the Mishnah says, don't do things for the sake of getting schar. That's not the way. You know? That's the 12 steps is focused on that. Buddhism is so beautiful in terms of its maybe so beautiful in terms of its throwing away of Olam Haza and letting go of everything and nullification of the self, but the whole point of it is self-centered. The whole entire point of it is totally self-centered. And the only reason I want to be good to the human race is because I will get schar. I will get connected to the ultimate pleasure after I die and blah, blah, blah. You know? So is that self-centered or is it good? Well, many people are serving Hashem in Yiddishkeit in a self-centered way, and it works for them. It works for the door of the Chofetz Chaim. Otherwise, why would he give shmuzing like that? It works for them. So then what's the right way to be? Well, you know, I'm being short on this now because it's a late hour, but that's where what I'm talking about leads. You know, surrender, at leading with my weakness is something that nobody wants to really do. That takes hakna'a. Not just anava, but hakna'a. Letting go of the self-concerned stuff so that I can stay sober. Is that selfish? I don't think so. That's like a losa, I say. You know, why did Hashem give Adam and Chava, of all the mitzvahs that he could have, he gave them one mitzvah, the Ramchal says, right? One mitzvah. And they didn't do it. So instead, now we have 613. Fine. So what's the one mitzvah? He gave them one mitzvah to do in Gan Eden, and they failed the test. What mitzvah did he give them? He didn't give them a mitzvah. He gave them a los asay. Okay? He didn't give them an asay. He gave them a los asay. Why did he give them a los asay? Because that's the lowest level of participation, to erase Nama de Kisufa. That's the lowest. Just don't do anything. Adam Mechaba could have slept. They could have gone to sleep and everything would have turned out okay. But no, you know, they didn't do that. He just gave them a lo sase. What's the lo sase here? Don't drink alcohol. Don't get drunk again. Don't trash your life. Don't destroy your life. That's the goal of 12-step. That's the bottom line goal of 12-step groups all, you know, the world over. Don't trash yourself, you know? Don't kill yourself. You know, that's not a very self-centered goal, I'm sorry. And that's the beauty of 12 steps. The advantage that it has over any religion is that it lends itself to achna'a and anava, because the goal is not self-aggrandizement or schar or anything else. Or what feat you have by Avraham Avinu and Asad Lavo, that's not what it's about. It's about not trashing yourself. You know? I got my 10th year anniversary, and my wife says to me, it was something around 10 years, and I said to her, you know, I was proud. I said, you know, I got 10 years now, thank God. And she said to me something like, so for 10 years you didn't shoot yourself in the head. How am I supposed to really be happy about, like, we're supposed to make a celebration for 10 years you didn't kill yourself, you didn't jump off out the window? You know, okay, it's great that you're alive. I'm happy you're here. Except how do you celebrate that you didn't, you know, destroy yourself? I stopped wasting money. Do you ever do that with finances? That you save money, that you realize that you were paying a bill, you know, that you were wasting money paying, you know, twice as much for your water bill as you needed to. You corrected the glitch, and now 10 years later you make a celebration that, Baruch Hashem, we have, I don't calculate it well, but, you know, $15,000 extra now. You know, hooray, and you make a party. You know, like nobody does that. You know, you don't screw up. You know, you're grateful. You didn't screw up. You're very grateful, you know. So what do we do in 12-step groups? You have an anniversary birthday. You make an announcement. You know, at the meeting, they say, anybody have any anniversaries? Yeah, I got an anniversary, 10 years. Everybody goes, hey, congratulations. And the guy who has the anniversary, if it's me, you know, I start clapping before everybody else does, because I'm not clapping myself. I'm not the guy that did it. Their bunch of them did it. I'm just the guy that wanted it, you know, because it hurt too bad not to have it. So congratulations to me. But there's a lot of anava there. It's self-preservation is great. Why? Why? Because now you get to live. Well, what's so good about living? Well, that's where religion comes in. Religion comes in to say, well, I'll tell you what's so good about living. You can do mitzvahs. You can know God. You know, you can, you know, that's basically what it is, doing mitzvahs and knowing God. That's what the Navi says, Haskel v'yadoa osi, know me, right? You know, Al kitzal al chokham v'chokhma so y'oshir v'oshir gibor v'gvur so, what is it? Haskel v'yadoa osi, do chesed to people, you know, do mitzvahs and know me. That's what life is about. That's what the Torah says the life is about, the Nevi'im and the Torah. That's it. Is it about Tzar and Olam Haba? Well, the Ramchal says that that's how it works, because Hashem wanted to give it, blah, 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 blah. That's not the point, though. The point is that we're born al-Korchach, and we die al-Korchach. And al-Korchach hata osi li ten din v'cheshben. It's all al-Korchach. The question is, what do you want? You know? For an alcoholic, for an addict, it's a very beautiful trip, because we try to destroy ourselves for some stupid reason, we don't know why, but we try to destroy ourselves for the first part of our lives. We come to our senses and we realize, my God, I'm destroying myself. There's no point in destroying myself. Those who say, well, there's no point in living, end up killing themselves, unfortunately. And those who say that there might be a point in living, like me, I think there might be, I feel like there has to be, but I have no idea what it is. I know Yiddishkeit told me, blah, 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 but look at what a crappy Jew I am, because I'm a sexaholic all over the place. It's terrible. Yeah. There's a little background noise. If you can help us out and quiet it down, that'd be great. So, you know, finally I found the 12 steps. I got sober, and the 12 steps says, here's how you can survive. Thank God, I want to survive. You know, there's no glory in survival. It's good because it's survival. But now the question is, what's the purpose? Why? Well, what's so good about surviving? Once survival is no longer in question, a person naturally has the harkavas adas to turn to, well, why should I be alive? That's where Torah comes in. And Torah says, oh, I'll tell you why. Because there's mitzvahs to do, there's Hashem to know, and that's it. That's what Torah is. That, you know, to know Hashem, that's so it's kedai to live. Mazel tov. You know, that's what I've always meant when I say what Torah is. Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. First is Derech Eretz, meaning to live. After that's no longer an issue for me. I'm living and I'm safe. I'm sober. I'm living safe one day at a time. One day at a time, I'm safe. I found a way to live, to stay alive, to stay sane. Sanity is being alive, you know. If you're insane, you're not really, you know, what is that? You know what I mean? So it might as well be in a coma. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, it's even worse maybe. But anyway, so I have security one day at a time. Now what's the purpose? Now is the time for Torah. So the question was asked at the beginning of the call, how does the 12 steps enhance the, you know, the Torah, Avodas Hashem? So yeah, there are a lot of things in 12 steps that if you're an addict and you're working the 12 steps, you'll learn anava. So Shisharim says anava is like a bowling ball that smashes down tons of pins. Look in the beginning of Shar for anava in Mesil Shisharim. You'll see that he writes that. Anava just itself is something that like accomplishes a whole line of things, get taken care of automatically. You know, just from having anava. So in 12 steps, if you're an addict, you'll get anava. If you're not an addict, you're not going to get anava from 12 steps. If you're not an addict and you're doing 12 steps, you'll get gaiva from the 12 steps because you'll think you're better and better and better and better. It's going to make you worse probably if you're not an addict because you don't need it. It's extra credit and you know it. Now, if in some way you can convince yourself that it's not extra credit and you really stink and you absolutely need this for some reason because you're in Gehak Tetzaris if you don't have it, even if you're not an addict, so then you have a chance. Okay. But if you're not an addict and you're really doing this 12 steps just for Tikkun HaMidos kind of thing to improve yourself, so then you're not going to get the gift of Hachna'a and Anova here because there is none. Because you don't need it, so you won't get it. You only get stuff you need, period. That's just the way life works, you know? So when it comes to this kind of thing, you know? So, you know, but as far as benefiting from it as an addict, there's a lot of benefits. There's a lot of benefits. The biggest benefit of all of working the 12 steps if you're an addict for Avodas Hashem, the biggest benefit of all is that by being sober and in recovery, by being emotionally sober, I make space for Avodas Hashem. There's no space for it. There's no room for it. If I'm not sober, there's no room. There's no place for the Avodas Hashem to sit because all my energies are being expended on just staying alive. You know, I'm making it through the day. You know? How can you do Avodas Hashem if you're constantly struggling with, oh, there's a lady there, she has breath, oh no, oh, it's a struggle, get out, shmira say nine, boy. You know, like, what? That's not Avodas Hashem, you're nuts, you're just nuts. You know, if all day long it's all struggling, smuggling, then you have no space for Avodas Hashem. And yes, a person can say, well, that's the Avodas Hashem, and Rabbi Nachman said, you can misquote Rabbi Nachman from, you know, all day long, and say that Rabbi Nachman, make up that Rabbi Nachman said that the battle is all he wants, and the battle, and the battle, and the battle, and it's a big lie. It's a big lie. All it is self-centered, self-absorbed, religiously excused playing. That's all it is. And it's self-destruction. There's no space there for Avodas Hashem because the person is just serving himself. he's fighting his desires and he's trying to be a Baal, whatever, to be known as a Baal, something, Midas Yesod. He wants to correct him, Bris HaLashon, the Bris HaMor, and here and there, and bring him Shias, and blah, 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 blah. He's a star-crossed tragic figure on the big stage of life, and he's a big actor. And he takes, Bishvili Nivra Olam, and he misuses it to make himself the center actor in the whole stage. He misquotes the Mesos Yesharim that says, Nimsa, Milchama Alav Panim Va'afar, and that you're the main actor in the center of the stage, and the whole world goes up or down with you, and blah, blah, blah. He misuses that kind of stuff, and he takes it really to make himself a dramatic, great figure of the epoch, in his own mind. That's what happens to us. In 12 steps, if you're an addict, you're not the big actor on the center of the stage in the universe by not blowing your brains out every day by drinking alcohol. I deserve to be famous because I'm sober for 36 years. I deserve to be famous because I'm, sober for 50 years. What's the fame in that? Learning Shas, now that's something to be famous for. I agree. Not blowing your brains out, not trashing your life, that's the reason to be famous. That's Hakna'a and Anava, acceptance of the realities here. And all I'm trying to do is survive. Once I survive and I'm secure because I have emotional sobriety, now I have space. I have plenty of space for Avodas Hashem. That's Derech Eretz Kodma L'Torah. That's how, to me, the 12 steps can benefit somebody in their Avodas Hashem. Now, if you're not an addict and you want to use the 12-step ideas for Avodas Hashem, my caution to you is that you're very likely to end up just doing, self-aggrandizement. That's what's very likely to happen, because you're going to be proud of all the accomplishments that you're making. If that's good for you, if that's not self-aggrandizement, if that helps your ego, if that's good for you and it really works for you, I have no claim against that. I'm not arguing with that possibility. I think that that's possible. Except... maybe it's not really good for you. Maybe it's not really helping you. Maybe it's Vayigbalibi, the Darkei Hashem. It's not really Darkei Hashem. It's really Darkei Atzmi, and that's really it. How do you know? How do you know? You got to look into your own heart to know. Nobody else can tell you. I can't tell you. That's for sure. But if you don't know that the danger exists, and you think that just because you're doing more mitzvahs now, that means that you're better, I don't think you have much of a moral compass. There's something missing here. Anyway, I hope that was useful. Again, went 10 minutes over. I hope that everybody has a good day. I hope that if anybody has any questions in the email, you just email me. It'll be easier to have a topic tomorrow. God willing, if one day at a time, just one question, we can try to go from there together. I hope I didn't say anything that hurt anybody's feelings or that can be easily misunderstood by anybody. If you feel like always, if you feel like if whoever listens to this, if you're listening to it by recording or if you're on the call, and you think that I said something that sounds like it's a bikursus or it's wrong or whatever, please, don't just think it and, whatever. Email me and say, Dov, I think that what you said is wrong, or I think that what you said contradicts something else that we all know is true. And we can either talk about it or not, but I think that would be a good thing, a fair thing to do for me and for yourself, too. But anyhow... the Icarus, have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.